Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name's Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and also the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome back Ben Gordon to our podcast. Ben is founder of BGSA Holdings and also Cambridge Capital down in Palm Beach, Florida. Ben draws on a career spent investing in, advising, and building supply chain and technology companies. At BGSA Holdings, he has led the firm's efforts advising on more than $1 billion worth of supply chain transactions. He's worked with firms including UPS, DHL, Kuehne+Nagel, Agility Logistics, NFI Logistics, Genco, Nations Express, Raytrans, Echo Global, Dixie, Willpack, and many others. Prior to BGSA Holdings, Ben founded Threeplex, the internet solution enabling third-party logistics companies to automate their business. He raised $28 million from blue-chip investors, including Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, Bank Boston Ventures, CNF, and Ionian. Threeplex was then purchased by Maersk. Prior to Threeplex, he advised transportation and logistics clients at Mercer Management Consulting. And prior to Mercer, Ben worked in his family's transportation business, AMI, where he helped the company expand its logistics operations. Ben received an MBA from Harvard Business School and a Bachelor of Arts degree from Yale College. Hey, Ben, thanks for joining us again.
Jeff, great to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. A real pleasure. Ben, we've talked a lot in the past, and you've been a tremendous friend and resource to the magazine over the years. You definitely have your pulse on sort of what's going on when it comes to all things freight transportation, supply chain, and logistics, M&A based, if you will. With that as sort of a backdrop, how do you sort of view or assess the current state of deal making within our space, Ben?
Well, I think it remains as active as ever. One of the amazing things about this year is, notwithstanding freight recession, interest rate hikes, banking crisis, and all the other challenges, we still see a tremendously active deal environment in logistics and supply chain. And today, for example, we just saw the second largest truckload acquisition in history.
Yes.
Which is the Knight-Swift acquisition of U.S. Express. And then, interestingly enough, we also saw on the logistics side, DSV making the acquisition of two affiliated companies, S&M Moving Systems and Global Diversity Logistics, that give DSV leadership in, number one, the semiconductor sector, but also, number two, growing strength between the U.S. and Mexico, and more broadly, U.S. and LATAM, all of which are themes for what we're going to see more of this year, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ben, but before we drill down, let's circle back quickly just to the USX, the Knight-Swift USX deal. What in your opinion do you think are sort of the key drivers or key synergies that are related to that specific deal? It is such big news today.
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, Knight-Swift has been an acquisitive company for a long time, and certainly for the last 20 years. This is one of the biggest deals they've ever done. This adds $2 billion of revenue to what previously was an $8 billion company. So it brings Knight-Swift to a $10 billion business. I think it does three things for them. One, it continues their history of acquisitions. Two, it allows them to double down on their leadership in truckload. It really cements a number one position for Knight-Swift. And then number three, it also gives them the opportunity to take out some costs at a time when the freight recession is imposing challenges for everybody. I mean, last year, we saw a record number of truck failures, the largest number of trucking bankruptcies since 2008. And with freight rates down, in some cases, 30%, depending on lanes and segments that you're looking at, there's a lot of pain and suffering in multiple areas of the trucking side. So buying a competitor, taking out capacity, creating more pricing discipline, and also some synergy by virtue of being able to take out some duplicate costs, like you don't need two CFOs and two CTOs and two HR. All those give Knight-Swift advantages with respect to the U.S. Express acquisition.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. You know, and Over the years, Ben, we've talked a lot about your sort of thesis regarding service convergence. And that applies obviously to large scale deals like the ones you just discussed, as well as, tuck-in type deals or smaller deals, if you will. And I'm just wondering, with that as sort of a backdrop, does service convergence remain alive and well in the M&A space for our sectors?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the second deal that was announced today is a good illustration of that, because what also happened on the supply chain services side was the DSV acquisition, as I mentioned, of two companies in Arizona,
yes.
Global Diversity and S&M Moving Systems. And that's an example of convergence. Basically, DSV, which is really known as a powerhouse in multiple areas of supply chain, this gives them other capabilities. Well, really, this gives them more strength in a new sector for them in semiconductors. It also gives them geographic expansion, kind of the US Latin America capability. DSV's service scope was already pretty broad. They've got air, sea, road, warehousing, and these acquisitions give them a little bit more of all of the above.
Yeah.
So this is probably more about geographic expansion than service expansion, but it's a little bit of both. And then similarly, I think without disclosing anything confidential, I will tell you that I believe there are other companies in the supply chain world that are looking to continue to add capabilities. So warehousing companies adding freight forwarding, freight forwarding companies adding truck brokerage companies adding last mile. That expansion of service capabilities is alive and well. And the reason it's alive and well is because customers want it. Customers want supply chain partners that can do more for them. And so acquisitions that allow supply chain companies to deliver that make all the sense in the world.
Right. So sort of allowing those acquiring companies to sort of really jump in as opposed to have to do sort of an organic build out, which obviously could take a lot of time, energy, resources, et cetera. So that's very helpful. And you just mentioned last mile. How do you sort of view the current state of deals related to e-commerce / last mile? Do you think they're still happening at a high level, or have they maybe shifted to other segments and areas? You just mentioned freight brokerage, for example, trucking brokerage, technology, automation, warehousing seem to be picking up steam. What are sort of some of the hot verticals within the deal-making space, or is it kind of everything at once?
Well, there's still activity in e-commerce logistics, but a couple of things have changed. One is that some of the acquisitive tech-based companies, because of the great revaluation of the last year, are no longer able to buy companies at the same multiples. I mean, as an example, P44 bought a string of companies, but P44, yes. Publicly said, well, we're raising money at 30 times revenue, so therefore we'll buy businesses at anything less than that and it will be accretive. Well, in a world where the public multiples have come down, and all you have to do is look at the public baskets of stocks, look at companies like Salesforce and others. Mm-hmm. If multiples are down by 50% on average, that means that buyers, public company and private equity backed buyers, simply can't pay as much anymore. And so those deals can still happen, but they're not going to happen at the same prices of 2020, 2021.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean that they don't still make sense. It just means that there's a reset on valuation.
Okay.
Having said that, where is their deal activity? Well, number one, there's still private equity backed consolidators in the logistics and supply chain technology world. Number two, there's still public companies looking at acquisitions that allow them to pick up more, more scale or more service convergence, as you noted, or other capabilities. And then number three, there's still venture capital and private equity interest. It's just at a lower valuation, and B, with a focus on things like path to profitability and favorable unit economics that matter a lot today and didn't matter as much to many other buyers 2 years ago. So I think those things have shifted, but look, in areas like e-commerce logistics, We have companies that, you know, we've been investing in and supporting in last mile, like Bring, and reverse logistics, like Reverse Logics, and e-com fulfillment, like Bird. And in all these areas, there's still lots of growth, lots of activity, and lots of opportunity.
Okay, terrific. And you had just mentioned how we remain in this freight recession, Ben. Given sort of the uneven nature of the economy, do you see economic environments which are more or less favorable to deal making at certain times, or are they all kind of just unique individual setups, if you will, where the economy maybe is not as much of a factor as one may think?
Well, I think in a world where the interest rates are so much higher today than they were even just a year ago, bank financing costs are higher, and therefore cost of capital is higher, and therefore people's willingness to pay is lower and ability to pay is lower. Now, that matters for highly levered deals, okay? So it matters for large cap private equity deals where lenders, you know, could have been providing 6, 7, 8 times EBITDA worth of leverage. And those kinds of deals don't happen anymore, right? There's just not that same level of high leverage available in the markets. On the other hand, smaller deals and deals that are tuck-ins and deals that are add-ons for strategic buyers, you know, public strategic buyers in particular, those kinds of deals are still happening. It's no coincidence the two deals that were announced today, Knight-Swift and DSV, were both multi-billion dollar public companies buying smaller businesses for deals that didn't require them to put on massive leverage because of the strength of their own existing balance sheet. So I think the deals that we're talking about today are a microcosm of what I think we're going to see in 2023.
Okay. All right. Great. And I couldn't help but think about sort of what we're seeing when we look at certain aspects within the supply chain. One that jumps to mind for me, Ben, is just the whole concept of automation/robotics, things going on inside the four walls to a large degree. Are you seeing any type of uptick in deals related to those types of sectors, or is it kind of status quo relative to other parts of the supply chain?
Well, there's a lot of interest and activity in that realm. There's a lot of interest and activity in robotics, mainly because the growing labor cost in the supply chain world. I mean, if you think about it, a lot of warehousing companies in 2020 and 2021 got a rude awakening when they found that people, they were really competing with the government. They were competing with the 99-week unemployment insurance that the government was paying. And even though that got cut back, you know, fundamentally, the wage price inflation spiral that we've all experienced in the last 2 years, where there was a spike in wages, and that in turn led to a spike in inflation, which is, you know, part of what we're all living through right now. It caused people to say, all right, let me find ways to do my work in ways that are more automated and don't require as much labor. So the interest in automation in supply chain has never been higher. And I can tell you that, you know, at Cambridge Capital, we've looked at venture-backed companies in all kinds of areas of robotics and automation and humanoid robots, which are really kind of creepy. They're, as they sound like, right? Robots that look like people that are operating, in some cases, as cobots integrated with humans in a warehouse setting. But you're going to see more and more of this. And so whether there's M&A in robotics or not, I think that may take longer, but there's plenty of customer interest in using more automation, and there's plenty of venture capital funding these kinds of opportunities as well.
Okay, great. Thanks. And sort of the same question, Ben, along a different path, and it just had to do more with sort of the concept of sourcing, bringing goods closer to consumer, closer to home. Are you seeing any more Are you seeing any level of interest in deals with sort of a regional distribution slant, if you will, sort of maybe focused on the easing or shortening of transit times in order to kind of work around lengthy global transit times? Or is that just sort of something that maybe I may be way too ahead of my skis on, if you will? But I guess I'm asking, you know, anything with that regional angle or element, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, look, a couple of things happening on the regional side. One, this whole macro shift from China to North America. So if you think about it, 1972, Nixon went to China. And that began a 50-year experiment in trying to bring China closer to the U.S. when it came to foreign policy. And I think it's safe to say that the experiment is over and China won. Because China's economic growth has been staggering. I mean, they've been growing at an average of 7%, which means they double every 10 years, whereas the U.S. economy has been growing at a rate closer to 2%. And it's the reason why China went from being a poor third world country in 1972 to what today is a country on pace to outpace the United States and become the number one largest economy really within just a few years. And so for a variety of reasons, I think, look, Trump and tariffs and other things notwithstanding, that underlying power dynamic is really a huge factor in all this. So I think more and more U.S. companies are realizing that it's in their interest to have supply chains that are based in North America, not to be dependent on China. So what's happening is, first of all, it's very good news for U.S., Canada, Mexico logistics mm-hmm. and the supply chain companies that serve that. Secondly, I think that's one of the reasons why the DSV acquisitions that were announced today are a microcosm of what we're going to see more of, because that those acquisitions support DSV's U.S., Mexico, and U.S. LATAM supply chains. And I think that that's something that we're going to see more and more of.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, I was just sort of curious, you know, you've obviously just answered part of it, but when we're looking out over the next, say, 3 to 5 years, Ben, how do you sort of view things? It seems like there's just many different directions for deal making, and you've been sort of at the front of the line with your visibility and your access and your knowledge here. How do you see the next 3 to 5-ish years playing out in this space as it relates to deal making?
Well, a couple of things. One, I think we will continue to see more consolidations. Companies like Knight-Swift buy head-to-head competitors, take out capacity, increase their relative market share, and strengthen their leadership position. Number two, I think we'll continue to see more service convergence, as you alluded to, and as we've talked about before, where companies look to expand the scope of services they offer. Number three, I think we'll see more of the nearshoring and the resulting deal activity for US, US Mexico, US Latin America, US Canada. And then number four, I think the interest in e-commerce and e-commerce supply chain will continue to be strong. I think you will see e-commerce companies making acquisitions to expand their e-commerce supply chain offerings. I think you also see logistics companies buying tech companies to expand their tech-enabled footprint. And I think you'll see more venture capital and private equity in the e-commerce logistics arena. So I think in aggregate, the deal environment for supply chain remains very active, remains robust, and it remains robust because there are real underlying problems to solve and customers want it.
Okay, great. And something that I thought about before we hopped on here, Ben, I've been thinking about XBO and sort of how when they entered the market in 2011, and subsequently in the following years, especially the following 3 or 4 years, really, really ramped up by buying, making strategic decisions and buying companies in certain modes and certain areas of the supply chain. That seemed to me like a very unique approach, a very unique model, obviously requires a lot of capital. In today's times, all these years later, would that be a very difficult model to emulate? Or do you think what XBO did was sort of a unique one-time thing?
I think XBO was the best practitioner at its time of roll-ups in logistics. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still room for lots more. I think, and the reason for that is one, still fragmented market, truck brokerage, freight forwarding, warehousing. These are all categories where the top 50 companies still have only a little over 50% of the total market share. So
right.
Still tremendous opportunity to do more. Two, XPO showed that you could add value by integrating capabilities, taking out costs. Even though they integrated and then deintegrated,
yes,
that still remains true. And third, you could apply that playbook elsewhere. For example, you could apply it in last mile. You could apply it in areas of supply chain technology. You could apply it in freight forwarding. So there are other sectors that have not yet gone through that same consolidation that represent opportunities.
Okay. All right. Great. And just to wrap up, Ben, I just had a couple real quick general sort of industry questions, if you will. One just sort of has to do with all the ongoing there's tons of evidence out there. When we look at sort of the intersection of declining imports, coupled with still fairly high levels of inventories, how do you sort of see that challenge, if you will, within the supply chain space, and how do you see it sort of playing out? And I just ask because a lot of Wall Street analysts, for example, are pointing to a stronger freight market over the second half of the year. Hopefully, anyhow. I'm just wondering how you see that situation, and if you also see the second half of the year being stronger than the first half.
Well, I'll tell you, at our annual conference, so, you know, I have two businesses. We have our investment bank, BG Strategic Advisors, which has done over 50 deals in logistics and supply chain M&A. And then yes. We have our private equity business, Cambridge Capital, which has invested in 8 platform companies in supply chain. At the 17th annual BGSA Supply Chain Conference, where we had over 350 CEOs and supply chain leaders, one of the panels was the trucking panel. We had 5 trucking CEOs, and they included CEOs of some of the largest companies in that field, like Werner, Yellow, Covenant, et cetera. And the consensus on that panel was exactly this, that the first half of the year would be tough. The second half of the year, there would be a strong rebound in capacity, well, in freight demand, which in turn would be good for the capacity side. So mm-hmm. So I guess we'll see, but the consensus from a lot of smart people who are major CEOs in the transportation world would agree that the second half looks to be shaping up to be much stronger.
Okay. All right. Great. And then the other one, just real quick, Ben, was just, there's also been a bit of a narrative about an easing of the supply chain struggles that were so commonplace throughout COVID, for example, and maybe sort of a return to supply chain normalization, a bit more of a normal rhythm or cadence to things. How are you sort of seeing that at this point?
Well, look, I think the nothing seems to be normal right now. I mean, we're coming off of a week where we had the second and third largest bank failures in American history.
Yes.
Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. And the day before Silicon Valley Bank failed, the CEO was quoted as saying, "Remain calm." It reminded me of that scene at the end of Animal House where the
Kevin Bacon.
Exactly.
Yes.
The head of the fraternity says, "Remain calm, all is well." Right before the car crash, blows up his float. And
oh, so goodness! Yes.
It feels like we're living in an Animal House meets banking moment. And so, look, nothing really seems normal now. But on the other hand, freight still has to move, and there's still customer demand, and so. I think the good news is there's still plenty of plenty of opportunity to do better in the supply chain arena, and plenty of plenty of opportunity, whether it's in last mile or port-based logistics or warehousing, freight forwarding, supply chain, truck brokerage, different areas of e-commerce logistics. Like, all these are areas of growth right now, and there are pain points to solve. So, I think this is this will remain a world where there's a need for great supply chain innovation, and I think that's great news from a deal standpoint.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Very good. Listen, Ben, this brings us to the end of our time for today's podcast. And on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thanks for joining us again today. It was terrific to have you back.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, always a pleasure to be with you, and thank you.
Yeah, no, you got it. Absolutely. Thanks again. And for those of you on Twitter, please feel free to go ahead and give Ben a follow, simply at Benjamin H. Gordon. And he's also got a great presence on LinkedIn, and that's just linkedin.com/in/BenGordon1818/. Also, please feel free to give us at Logistics Management a Twitter follow, simply at LogisticsMGMT. And please go ahead and subscribe to our podcast. If you aren't already doing so, just simply look for Supply Chain 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day, and I look forward to catching you next time.